Welcome back to NALP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Miles Caparis from Include Software, Luke Melandrano from Mariani Landscape, Macy Wallenberg from Landcare, and Neil Glatt from Grow the Bench. How is everyone doing today?
Doing fantastic.
I'm great.
Miles.
Great, Miles. How are you?
I'm catching my breath from that. I'm good. Hanging in there. Look at my hand. I got like a club wrapped around.
Oh yeah. How did your surgery go?
Oh my gosh. I got like 6 screws into my thumb. It's pretty gnarly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So, when was that? Tuesday?
Tuesday. Yeah. So I don't recommend it. But anyways, we move on. It's all good. Give the body some rest. But we're here. This is invigorating. I always like hanging out with y'all. So, and we have a guest. So who's going to do the intro on that?
I guess I'm up this week.
All right.
Today joining us, we have Matthew Ross, who is known for his appetite for garden exploration. He is a passionate advocate for public gardens with a special affinity for the underappreciated and unheralded gardens of the world. He is the director of continuing education at Longwood Gardens and responsible for the development and delivery of over 200 programs on site and online annually. Prior to his arrival at Longwood, Matthew spent 6 years in Toledo, Ohio, where he worked as a horticulturist at Toledo Botanical Gardens, instructed nearly 20 courses at Owens State College, and developed a 5-acre urban farm and training center. He is a proud graduate of Michigan State University, where he earned his bachelor's and master's degrees in horticultural science with an emphasis on landscape design and urban forestry. With an eye for finding nature's rhythms, Ross is an advocate for native plants as a national board member and spends his free time photographing the abundance of beauty in the natural landscape. Matthew, welcome. Anything I missed there?
No, you did a great job. Thanks for the introduction, Luke.
Absolutely. Glad to have you with us.
Definitely. Glad to be here.
So do you have a place where we can find your photography, by the way? I'm a photographer in my spare time too. Do you have like a personal website or?
Yeah, not a website, but on social media. I'm very active on social media. So Instagram, Facebook, you're more than welcome to give me a follow. And thanks for the nod on the photography. It's a real passion of mine.
Is it like at Matthew Ross or something? Is that what you do?
MSU Matador with 2 O's. So, you know, I had the nickname Matador when I played soccer at Michigan State. And, you know, somebody already beat me to the chase on Instagram. So.
Oh, so you had to make do.
But, yeah, definitely.
All right, cool. Well, that's good to know. Welcome to the podcast, Matthew. This is really cool. I'm excited. I love Longwood Gardens personally. I've gone there, I don't know how many times, but growing up with my father being a landscaper, and I grew up in Northern New Jersey. So we go down to Longwood all the time, all different seasons. I love the Christmas. So I love Christmas time. Like when like the poinsettias come out, and you know, just like, it's amazing. Just, I don't know if our listeners who have never gone, you should definitely go. It's incredible. So really, really excited to have you on. It's a world-class place. How do you even get started? How do you even get started and like get to a place like Longwood Gardens, like where, you know, that's. Yeah.
So I got started when I was 3 years old. Unlike many other people that come to our profession a little bit later in life, when I was 3 years old, I knew I wanted to work with plants. I was at my grandmother's house and we were eating chives, and then I went home and started eating the front lawn. And got home and my dad's like, "What's going on with my son? He's eating grass." And I'm like, "Oh, we did it at grandma's." And my dad was probably thinking either grandma's slipping into senility early or there's something going on with my son here. Went to my grandmother and she showed me the difference between chives and grass, and I was forever hooked. From there, I started working landscaping when I was a young kid. I was the guy with a mower and a pair of hedge trimmers going door to door, trying to earn my first car, which was a 1979 Honda Accord with no floorboards. It was really awesome. But you know, when you can landscape using a Honda Accord and then like a late model Pontiac Bonneville, I think you can handle when you go to the big leagues and start working from a truck. And from there, I went to Michigan State. Didn't know what I wanted to go into. and had a class with Marcus Duck, who I know many of you know as well. Fantastic instructor, real popular coach and advocate for NCLC and NELP. And in that class, we got to meet a lot of professionals and everybody loved their job. And at the time I was thinking business and went to a business, career fair and talked to a guy who was in logistical management. And I was like, oh, cool. What's the best part of your job? He's like, honestly, I love golf. So the best part of my job is the fact that I get to golf all the time. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. He's like, do what you love, man. Do what you love. He's like, if you just want to be outside all day, do it. And really, that was a critical moment for me. Went into horticulture and never looked back. You know, go green, go white, go state. We're a fantastic horticultural school. I didn't even know what horticulture meant when I was in college my first year. And my brother, who was also Michigan State alum, said, why don't you take a class, intro to horticulture? Like, it's what you do, you know, as a landscaper and lover of plants. And really from there, continued doing some side gigs and then went on to work for Ray Wiggins Nursery. And that's really where I cut my teeth in the industry. They're a major retail wholesale nursery in Macomb, Michigan, and worked as a salesman, did a little bit of design work in there. My uncle came along and worked for his company for a little while and then went to Owens Community College. And that's where, you know, started teaching and molding the minds of future horticulturists. And many of them have fantastic jobs right now in the golf course industry and the horticultural industry and urban farming, which was an initiative that we started. And then, you know, had a great interview and found my way at Longwood.
That's so cool. So cool. You had no idea that you'd be ending up at, like, your end goal wasn't Longwood. It was just,
no,
just kind of happened.
Yeah. It was something that, I don't know if you know Dr. Shutsky at Michigan State, but he was from New Jersey as well. Mm-hmm. And all of his photos when we did landscape design would always have these pictures of this place called Longwood. And growing up in Michigan, you know, you don't necessarily know everything there is to know about what's going on in the East Coast. And was always fascinated by the garden. So when the job market opened, and I knew of Longwood from NELP by going as a competitor to NCLC and meeting with Dr. Trader, and was very familiar with the gardens as a result, and was like, man, if there's a job there, I'm there.
That's awesome. So now you lead education. So what's your day job look like now? What is?
Well, now it's a lot different.
Yeah. I mean,
changed a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm one part of our greater education, which is now engagement and learning. So there's multiple facets of what we do at Longwood. So we have a 2-year residential program called the ProHort program. We have a lot of interns, both internationally and domestic, and that's all under one part of education. That's domestic and international studies. We have school and youth. We have a library and information services program. And we also have a fellowship, which is a 18-month program for those that are interested in like nonprofit leadership. Then there's continuing ed. So we're one piece of this larger bubble. And in continuing education, we're running classes both on-site and online. Right now we're a lot heavier in the online sector, but we are actually shipping flowers and shipping materials to people so that they can do work at their homes alongside us on Zoom. So we've adapted, you know, all of our program is adapted to be completely online right now. And then as we look to the future, we're going to be looking at what a hybrid model looks like moving forward. So every day is something different. I could be working with experts from overseas. I could be working with local nurserymen, local plant experts, staff here at Longwood. So I engage with a whole number of people all around the world. And it's really one of the things that makes working in a public garden great is that you never have the same day twice. For instance, you're editing videos, you're working on getting floral materials shipped out to California for a student that's taking a wreath class, stuff like that. It's really fun.
Sounds like a blast.
Yeah, that's really cool. How much interaction do you have with landscape companies, the majority of NALP and what you used to do yourself to an extent?
Yeah. So we interact in a multitude of ways. So the first way is that many landscape professionals are our teachers. So like in our landscape design program, we have a lot of registered landscape architects. We have landscape designers. We have garden designers. And many of them are working in the field and this is not their primary job, but they're really talented individuals that really want to share beyond what they're doing. at their day job and want to reach a broader audience. So that's one way that, you know, some of the top landscape professionals can share their viewpoint and help nurture the next generation of landscape professionals. So we have a whole slew of them that way. So a lot of teachers. Then we also have them as students. So we're you know, training them. A lot of the professional certification that they go through is focused on, you know, the landscape industry, maybe not as much in the fine gardening or maybe not as much into, you know, exploring their plant palette, where we provide that opportunity here at Longwood, where they really get a chance to have their mind blown with all the different opportunities. We're fortunate. Philadelphia is, you know, the hub of public horticulture. There's over 30 gardens in 30 miles. And learning from that, like, nucleus of plant experts is awesome. So you have people like Charles Cresson, David Culp, that are, you know, right at our doorstep, that are working with the landscape industry to help elevate their level. Now with the advent of, you know, our landscape design program being online, we're seeing a lot of landscape professionals that wish they had the opportunity to drive all the way out or fly out to Longwood taking our classes. And then many of them are running their own businesses or starting their own businesses as well. So students, faculty, definitely. And then, you know, personal interest. I'm still, you know, friends with a lot of people. I'm going to different nurseries. I'm going to different job sites. We do tours of different people's work as well. So one of our teachers, Dan Maffei, is a really, really well-known landscape designer out here. And we've taken our students on design tours. So it's a way to highlight the, you know, the amazing work that they're doing in the field too.
Yeah, that's super cool stuff.
One, I was so excited. Oh, sorry, Neil. But first of all, back to the beginning, I was so excited whenever I found out that you were coming on this, because I'm obsessed with Longwood Gardens and it's on my bucket list. And who knows, might make it a honeymoon trip this year, depending on how travel is. But my fiance and I are horticulture buffs, like nerds. We both work in landscaping. And so I was so excited to get to have you on here. And then I actually had a someone in my program at Oklahoma State who did the international program. And so I got to watch him on Instagram travel around. And so if you could like touch on that a little bit more, just because it was like, I was mind blown by it. Just someone having that opportunity after college, or like kind of like a last year thing. I just didn't even know it existed until he did it. And it was just,
you're talking about Logan, right?
Yeah, Logan.
Yeah. He was part of a program that we have, that we do staff exchanges with other gardens often. So we have a bunch of different programs where experts from other countries are coming here and we're sending our expertise overseas. Our two-year students have a international study abroad program through the ProHort program. And I was actually able to chaperone that once. And we saw, I think, 17 gardens in 11 days in Scotland and England, and got to help out with the Chelsea Flower Show. So there's really amazing opportunities for people that are looking at stretching beyond just this country. And Logan, I believe he was part of the triad program where they have two students from the US, two from the UK, and two from Japan, and then they rotate. So you have a full year where you're traveling the world, learning in Hyogo Prefecture in Japan, you're learning from the National Trust in England. It was called a triad program, which is really incredible, and has made some incredible waves with a lot of young horticulturalists and young landscape professionals that have really made a name for themselves as well. You know, getting a chance to work with people from all over the, you know, all over the world, and have those experiences is part of what makes public horticulture great.
Yeah, it was amazing. I wish I could like share some of his pictures from Ben, or even pictures that you have from these trips, like on the podcast, because it's awesome.
Yeah, and pictures of Longwood too. I mean, I know you said you're a big fan. I mean, our Instagram is drool worthy, right? It's like every day you're seeing something beautiful. We just brought out our blue poppies, the Mechanopsis Lingholm. And, you know, we're one of the few places in the States that you'll see them in display. And they're just like the bluer than Neil's shirt. If you guys saw Neil's shirt right now, imagine that color, a little bit lighter, and just breathtaking. And yeah, it's amazing to work here every day. And I live on the property, so I get to walk through the gardens on my way to work and my way back. And, you know, there's no place like it, really.
How gorgeous. So if you live there, you know, how many hours a day would you say that you work?
That's a fantastic question. I love my job. It's a big part of my life. And as a result, you know, it's hard to differentiate between my life and work, because I'm constantly seeking out new instructors, new teachers, you know, new ideas. So, you know, my life, it kind of bleeds together, but I would say on a daily basis, I'm on the property. If I'm here, I also travel a lot too. If I'm here, you know, I could be in the office and you'd lose track of time. You know, you might get in at 6 o'clock in the morning to help out with a project like what we did yesterday. We were delivering or having people pick up material for wreath classes. So, you know, getting here at 6 and leaving at 7 is not an uncommon thing, but, you know, and it's a beautiful place and you just need to take the 20 minutes to walk outside of where you're at in your office or, you know, for many of us, you know, as you elevate up, you spend less and less time outdoors and more time indoors. And that 20 minute walk through the gardens could be, you know, the coolest part of your day for sure.
So with that, so there's a lot of ways that we can go with this, but I kind of want to focus on your experience when you taught at college versus teaching at a public garden. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of give us a difference? Those are different students, different looks. What do you like better?
Well, what do I like better? I like both the same.
Maybe that's not a fair question, but you know, like just kind of.
So when I taught at Owens in Toledo, we had two campuses. We actually built a college campus, which was one of the coolest experiences you could ever imagine. Like we had students that were designing and building their own classroom, the building itself, like essentially building an entire college campus with a nonprofit focused on urban agriculture. So there, the best part about teaching in a collegiate environment is that you get a chance to build that relationship with your students where you see them every day, where you get to see them come in, you know, their very first class in horticulture, they sit down. Normally I would sit next to them because I was a little bit younger on the professor side, and I'd sit down and I'd listen in as like what their thoughts were as they were waiting for the first class to start. And I would normally sit and, you know, class would start and sit there for an extra couple of minutes and hear what people are saying. And then I would eventually make my way to the front of the class. And, awesome. You know, yeah, definitely. And hearing their very first day, the apprehension or any of the first day jitters in horticulture is mainly like, I don't know, like, I don't know all my plants, you know, there's a lot out there. You know, if I was a doctor, I'd be dealing with one species. There's 480,000 or more in the world. So like, what am I doing? You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And the big thing was always, you know, I want to be outside. I want to work with plants. I just love plants. And to see them go from like, I love plants, but I don't know a whole lot about them, to by the time they were done, even in our 2-year program, you know, rifling off scientific names, knowing more about the nativity of plants, understanding the ethnobotanical uses, like that spark is contagious. You know, and being able to build those relationships over time is something that's, you know, it's really a fulfilling journey. Equally fulfilling is the work that I'm doing now, where, you know, instead of having one class where I'd have maybe 20, 25 students at a time, you know, we're overseeing programs that reach thousands of people. So that classroom gets a lot bigger. And while I might not see them every day, you know that you're dramatically impacting the lives of our students. We have some free programs that we put online a couple of years ago that are focused on orchids, aquatics. And now we have one that's like an introduction to horticulture. It's a completely free program, open to anybody in the world. And when you read the comments in the discussion board, like I'm a flight attendant. I lost my job because of, you know, the circumstances, and I've always loved plants, but I didn't know where to get started. Or I've been taking care of an orchid that was my grandmother's 60 years ago, and I just wanted to be successful. And, you know, those type of comments, and you know that you're helping someone on their plant journey, that's pretty inspiring as well. So it is a change. I would say that the focus at Longwood is to be, you know, we're one of the world leading gardens. So, sorry, are you guys hearing the emails come through? Okay, good. Perfect. Cause I was like, oh man, there's like an email bopping through. You know, we're one of the world's great gardens. So really the scope is a much bigger platform than, you know, teaching in Toledo, Ohio. And I think a lot of it translates, you know, you feed off the student energy, you feed off the instructor's energy. And as long as you're connecting people with plants, regardless if you're in a collegiate environment or you're in a public horticulture environment, or maybe you're just a landscaper that wants to talk to a garden club, there's something magical about, you know, that finding commonality with a passion for plants.
So Matthew, I'm kind of curious to, you know, flip this onto the other side of like a student, a horticultural student. Mm-hmm. Why would you think that maybe going down the path that you did and working in public gardens might be a little bit more attractive to like a horticultural student versus, I guess, the more traditional track of going into working for a private company, you know, landscape design, maintenance, things like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think everybody's got their own path, right? So everybody's, you know, cut out. You're going to gain a couple more pounds if you're sitting in an office than if you're out there, you know, hustling every day. And working hard in the field. I love both. You know, I always wanted to have a position where I would be able to do both. And when I first started in Toledo, I was at the Botanic Garden getting my hands dirty. And then I was a teacher as well. So kind of blended both of those worlds together. I do miss a little bit of that, you know, the wake up at 5 a.m., get on the road and transform someone's yard. You know, that piece I do miss a little bit. So I think there's still a little bit of that landscape fire inside of me. But the reason public horticulture might be attractive to people that are, you know, students in horticultural programs or thinking about joining a horticultural program is really the expansion of the palette that you're going to be able to experience. So at a public garden, you're bringing in stuff from all over the world. You know, you sit in a conservatory and you can have plants from, you know, 50, 60 countries, all within view shed, where in a landscape setting, you're not always going to see that, right? So you might go to a client's home and the diversity of plants might not always be there because, you know, there's limitations. So you're seeing these incredible, you know, like menagerie of plants all around you if you're in public horticulture, and the opportunity to interact with the public in a more meaningful way than just, you know, one client. I'm at their house, I'm working with them, I'm helping them, I'm making their house look beautiful today. You might interact with 15 or 20 or even 50 people in public horticulture. So I think the expansion of the palette is a big reason why. And then the network of public gardens. So like Macy talked about it earlier. She's like, hey, my new husband and I are, you know, really excited about horticulture and public horticulture. And we've got a botanical bucket list. You know, it kind of blends that world of entertainment and horticulture together when you work in a public garden. And you know, a lot of times I don't see there being a huge differentiation in career path and necessarily the way to start in a horticulture program and end in a horticultural program. Whether you're looking at going into landscaping, you're going to have the same skill sets, the same tools that you would in public horticulture in many ways. It's what you do with that skill set after you graduate that really differentiates between if I'm going to work in maintenance and design and install, or if I'm going to work in public horticulture. And there still are a lot of jobs. I mean, I'm in a unique position because I'm in education. There are a lot of jobs in public horticulture where you are hands-on for sure. Your clients are the public. So you have a lot more than just one client to balance there.
Right. Well, and I think too, you know, I think about this, I've seen in one of the social media groups, I can't remember if it was the Women in Landscape or the Young Professionals, people talking about hiring horticulturists. And I think, you know, I think there's a market for that within companies, even maybe if you're a horticultural student, a public garden, and if you really want to work in that, you know, private company down the line, working in a public garden is a great stepping stone to increase your knowledge. Like you said, you're going to learn so much about more plants that aren't in our area. I think about our lead horticulturist, Jim Osborne, here at Mariani. I mean, he worked in public gardens for a little while, and the stuff he does for us and creates for us, I mean, it is unmatched by anybody else in our company who didn't go that route. So I think going that route really opens up some opportunities for people should they really want to become and go down the private company route later on.
You're totally on point, Luke.
And just after my experience at touring Mariani, those displays that are done by, what's his name again,
Luke? Jim Osborne.
Jim, right. Yeah. It's just absolutely incredible and so creative. And I think that's probably an underserved area, and especially for our clients who are or our landscapers who've serviced like either a high-end client or like a high-end commercial setting, like where creativity is like people pay for that, right? So I think that having that skill set is really, it's an underserved skill set for sure, because like what you get a lot, I feel in my experience, is like, oh, we've done this every year, you know, it's easy, you know, it's like we're going to push out the same proposal year over year over year. But you don't have that voice like a Jim or like a Matthew who's like teaching other people, like saying like, hey, no, we can, there's this new plant that's coming online that like that's really cool, let's put this into our displays. I think that's an underserved skill set. But I guess that kind of serves the question. It's like, Matthew, how do people find out, like, so if they're interested in that, right? But like they have mm-hmm. to, they have to, they like their current job, but they want to know like what the public gardens are looking for the future, like for new plant materials, stuff that you're really psyched about that's coming online. Do you guys publish that online? Is that like an easy Google? Like how do people find the information to like educate themselves more about like what's the, well, like, the first, what you're pumped about?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I would say the first thing to think about is the purpose of public gardens when they first originated. A lot of them were on botanical collections to understand the greater natural world, right? So if you think about it, there was a lot of plant exploration that was going on. People were bringing back plants from all over the world, and like, we need to showcase them somehow. And then, you know, that was kind of the advent of display gardens. And you think about places like W.J. Beal at Michigan State that was showing the economic plants and the diversity of the plant kingdom, right? So going to a public garden in itself is going to give you a lot of ideas. It's going to spark some creativity. And if you want to find a public garden near you, you can go to APGA, which is the American Public Gardens Association. They have a garden finder. And you just type in, boom, I'm going on a trip to Richmond, Virginia. Oh, check that out. There's Maymont, there's Lewis Ginter, there's all these other gardens that are in that general vicinity. And I'm going to do what Macy's doing and for her honeymoon. And we're going to bop around from a bunch of different gardens back and forth, right? So physically visiting is probably the most impactful way to see what's happening and kind of spread your knowledge and learn from the people that are at the gardens. You know, if you're a landscaper and you're at a public garden, have a conversation with someone that's working there. You know, spark that conversation. Like, what plants are you interested in? What, you know, you work here, you work directly with the plants, you know, what's going on in your world? Online is also another way. So a lot of, gardens have, curatorial divisions. So people that are checking nomenclature, seeing what's coming in. And then, several gardens also have plant explorers. So probably the coolest job that you could ever imagine, right? So like, Dr. Peter Zale, who works here at Longwood, he gets to travel the whole world looking for plants that have significant importance in the landscape. It's also a way of sharing germplasm across the world. So like if you're collecting from, you know, the Canary Islands is one place that Longwood's gone a lot of times looking for plants. You now have plants from the Canary Islands in your collection. So if there was ever a dramatic or significant change, catastrophic event that might wipe them out in the wild, it's a backup. And we're looking at like, hey, we have these beautiful ichiums. If you guys know ichiums, they're like these towering plants. They get like massive, like 6 foot, 7 foot tall. They're either in like bright red or a blue that just is that crystal blue. They're pretty amazing plants. If something was ever to happen to them in their nature, in their natural habitat, we have a backup. But we're also looking at how can we get those into the hands of the industry itself. So there's a lot of plant trials, and we're not alone. Chicago Botanic has them. Atlanta Botanic is working on orchids. You have trials at other gardens on the West Coast. And there's a connect with many of them with the industry itself. So when you think of like famous plant explorers, the book behind me, actually in my office, is about Longwood's plant exploration. You know, we've been on over 160 trips around the world. We've pretty much circumnavigated the whole world as an institution. Things like New Guinea impatiens started here. So if any of you grow New Guinea impatiens, they were part of a plant exploration trip and then a trials program here at Longwood. They got a salmon pink canna that just came out recently. We're really big in Clivia. So if you've ever grown any of the Longwood series or any plant that has Longwood in the name, Caryopteris, there's a Longwood blue. They came from our public gardens. Knowing what's like the next step. So like how are we going from plant exploration to being available in the industry? It does take a while. And you look for champions. So you look at people like Dan Hinckley has probably introduced more plants. I mean, through Heronswood, Tony, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name, Juniper Ridge, Plant Delights Nursery, you know, that have those oddities. you know, you might be paying a premium for them in the beginning, but then Tony Avent, there we go. But then they'll eventually become commonplace. So staying abridged to what's happening at the Public Gardens by going, following us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, looking at what's happening in terms of plant expiration. And then a lot of gardens like Missouri Botanic, Longwood, NC State has one as well, where they have plant catalogs online where you can have searchable databases of plants to see what we're growing. Here it's cool because it gives you the phenology too. So it lets you know when it's blooming.
I think it's so cool that there's this whole additional resource, right? I assume everybody who's listening to this is probably an NALP member who joined because of some of the resources, and they're phenomenal. But even if like you're not into the whole phenology, you just want to be able to design your first landscape for, you know, a customer who asked for a design. I know my local botanic has a helpline that they maintain with volunteers to call and just be like, what can I plant that will work and look good, you know? And it can be that simple. And I loved how you talked about the purpose of understanding nature and getting to experience it and being a steward of it. I mean, can you elaborate just on kind of that shared experience? Because I think everybody in our industry has that to a degree. And I think it's so great for people to hear how they live that out and how as a community we can help you know, be cognizant of our purpose in the industry. And you get to see people from, you know, all walks of life interact with landscape at your gardens in new ways. So can you share what that experience is like to see that?
Yeah, I'm getting the chills listening to you, Neil. You hit it right on. You know, the shared experience of being stewards of the land is really what all of us are involved in, you know, regardless if you're working maintenance or you're, you know, building a brick patio for a client. We're all interacting and engaging with nature in different ways, and really making that connection is what all of horticulture plant science is all wrapped around, right? So we're all part of this bigger picture. You know, you see it when people come here for the very first time, and their eyes just open wide. They're like, oh my God, this massive, you know, 4.5 acre conservatory, or there might be a fountain show going on. And you're like, it's a transformational moment. And it's created because of the vision of really one person that had the vision for what we are now, Pierre DuPont, right? So we had one patriarch, got the idea like, hey, he went to the World's Fair and he saw these fountains. This is awesome. I want to bring this into a garden setting. I've traveled the world. I've been to Europe and want to bring that aesthetic here to America. And like, I'm going to make that happen. You know, other gardens. Neil, whereabouts are you from? Where's the garden you were talking about?
I typically go to Tower Hill Botanic in central Massachusetts.
Yeah, so Tower Hill. I don't know the full story on Tower Hill, but there's probably an origin story, right, with Tower Hill where someone was like, hey, I really love nature and I want other people to experience it. So a lot of gardens, you know, Fairchild down in Florida was David Fairchild, you know, and it's the old estates of Edison and Ford, you know, the pillars of industry at other gardens. Each garden has its own story, right? So that's its own mark that at one point in time, you know, I was at Toledo Botanic, George Crosby was a guy who was just like totally into plants. And they had the vision that they were going to bring people together, you know, to appreciate it, to experience it. And whether that's through, you know, going to a concert because you love music and then you're like, oh my God, this is a beautiful setting. And then making that jump to, wow, someone built this setting with plants. Or someone's got to maintain this. This is something different, you know, like this is, you know, I'm looking at Macy's background, you know, I have a bunch of trees in LA, like, wow, that's amazing. Someone's working hand in hand with nature to provide this platform for us is a really transformative experience. You know, here we see over 1.5 million visitors a year. You know, we're one of the most visited gardens in the country and it has a huge impact on people's lives. But just as important is that neighborhood landscape that someone's walking by one day and they're like, oh my God, look at that house. Like the trees look fantastic here. Like, oh man, look at that. That one's like bright yellow. I wonder what tree that is. And then they find out, oh, there's this fruit there or there's something that I can engage with and eat off the property, right? There's pawpaws. And I'm like, oh man, I've never had a raw pawpaw before in the wild. And they dig in. There is something about that human connection to nature. And I also don't want to forget that there is also the conservation side where it's like you appreciate it for what it is. And like, if you come here, we've got a nearly 90 acre meadow, you know, you appreciate for what it is, but then also let's take that the next step and be like, oh, wow, this meadow is incredible. We should be more appreciative of the things that are around us. And one of the big connections that I try to make in my job is bringing all the walks of the greater plant world together. So bringing together floral designers, vegetable gardeners, landscapers, conservation biologists, all together to have the same conversation about how important it is for us to connect with nature in some form or fashion. We're all doing it. I hope I answered your question. I know I went on a little bit of a tangent there, Neil.
No, it was awesome. I it's exactly what I wanted to hear because, you know, I've been able to go to several gardens in different parts, you know, of the world and see some of that and experience that. But you get to observe so many people and you've had the professional experience in so many different areas. It's just really cool to hear that from your perspective, I think.
And it's interesting because each individual group of people or group of professionals are envious of an aspect of the other group of professionals, right? So you talk to floral designers and you're like, oh man, I'm going to talk all about flowers. And they're like, hey, you used to work on an urban farm. What was that like? like I've got an issue with my tomatoes. Can you tell me about my tomatoes? And I'm like, oh man, you're like one of the top floral designers in the world. And you want to talk tomatoes? That's cool. That's totally cool. Let's do it. Let's talk tomatoes. And then you talk to the person that's, you know, one of the top tomato experts in the world. And like, man, I was out hiking around Grandfather Mountain, North Carolina, and I had no idea it's one of the most diverse landscapes in the country. Right. So there is a little bit of that, you know, we're in our groups, but we all have a little bit of envy from another group and it's healthy, you know, it really is. And bringing those people together is really what the best part of my job is. So when you bring together, you know, we have a blockbuster event where we bring in Simon Lizette. Some of you might've seen him on HBO, really one of the top floral designers in the world and judges. And he was here, you know, at Longwood, and then other people got to interact with him that might not have known him. We had the Iyamoto, the head of Sugetsu in Japan, Akane Takeshihara. And she was here the same time that we had another designer who now lives in Mexico. Brad Austin was here. And like the two of them are connecting with each other. And then, you know, you go out to dinner and you have a local floral farmer. You have, Brad, who's this amazing, you know, he does the flowers for movies and TV hanging out. And then, you know, some of my landscape friends that, you know, we all sit down and the conversation's just incredible. You know, like bringing together those great minds is really the best part of my job.
There's a lot of passion in there. I get excited listening to you. Like, I'm kind of speechless because I'm just like, oh my word. That's really cool. It's cool seeing someone who's like super passionate about what they do, you know? So it sounds like is bringing people together to talk about like things that you're really passionate, like what inspires you? Is that like,
yeah, it might just be that we're having pizza at the beer garden and talking about life.
That's
and then
awesome.
See a fountain show, you know?
So good.
That sounds like where I need to be at. At the beer garden eating pizza. That sounds awesome.
And the fountain shows are awesome at Longwood. Can definitely, they're so cool. It's such a classic thing.
And if you haven't been since we have the beer garden, Miles, it's a nice treat too. So
where did you guys put the beer garden?
It's outside the Terrace restaurant. So it's,
oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't been since then.
Yeah, yeah.
I think awesome. We need to add that to our list of field trip locations for a live podcast.
Live from Longwood? I would totally do that. Yeah, if we could do live from Longwood, that'd be really awesome. And every season there is so cool, like I said. I mean, I went there in the winter because I was like slow time for the most of the time. And like we kind of made a tradition. And it's so creative. Like the creativity just blows me away. What the team at Longwood does is it's truly world class. And it depends on where you are in the country, but it's really generally pretty accessible too. You can fly into Philly and it's not too far. And that'd be really cool to do it live from there, but I totally recommend the visit. It's so cool. That's cool that you work there, you know?
And, oh yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
So.
And Luke was talking earlier about his colleague at Mariani and you know, and you just mentioned something about the creativity that's blossoming here that is one other aspect. If you are a young horticultural student wondering if you wanted to go into public horticulture, you also get the ability to experiment that you normally wouldn't do for a private residence or in the private sector. You know, I wish that you had those opportunities more. They're still out there for certain clients, but you know, how often do you get to build out an entire display for the Christmas season using plants from all over the world and bringing in trees and ornaments? And really it starts with our lead designer, Jim, but it's also the horticulturists that are underneath Jim and that are working with volunteers and working with other staff and interns, that whole mindset comes together to bring and put together like the Christmas display, which is one of the ones that we're most well known for. It's awesome. You know, how often, Macy was talking about a friend, Logan. You know, Logan was part of some of the displays here where he's like, man, it was like my idea. Maybe it was his idea to say, let's use this begonia instead of that begonia. And then we show it off to the world. And during Christmas, you know, you have 450,000 people coming through that see the plant that you selected for this one container. You know, you don't always get that opportunity in the private sector.
No, and the scale at Longwood is something else too. I mean, like when you go there and you're just like, I think if you're not in the industry or like you haven't worked with plants or installed it, you take it for granted a little bit. You're like, man, this is really, really pretty. But then when you're like a member of the industry, you're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of work. And that's a lot of planning. And like, you really appreciate it. And it's really something else. Like, it's just like, I always remember like, walking into like the main conservatory and like, you guys had cyclamen like all throughout, like all the different colors, and it's just so many flowers. Like just the amount, the quantities. It's just I don't know, kind of rambling now, but it's truly amazing. So, but
the chrysanthemums.
Yeah, chrysanthemums. Really, when you talked about people that are in the industry going and then knowing what it takes to make a display look like that. Mm-hmm. That's something that the general public doesn't always think about. And when you think about the Chrysanthemum Festival here, it's arguably one of the most dramatic alterations of a plant that you could ever imagine. So we have a 1,000 bloomer, which is an 18-month-old grafted mum with over 1,000 blooms on one plant. And if you've ever done grafting, and I know, you know, the students that are listening right now are like, man, I remember doing grafting in class. It was either super cool or it was like, man, that's a lot of work and it might not make it. You know, the science behind it, the manpower behind that is incredible. And it's not just the 1,000 bloomer. We have cascades. We've got specialty mums from all around the world. And if you've worked in mums, like say you were working at a nursery or a greenhouse and you've worked in mum culture, you're like, it's a lot of work to have to cut back, you know, a whole greenhouse or a whole hut of mums. And then to think that someone does that every week for, you know, 30 weeks on a plant is pretty incredible, right? Or they're working on it every, you know, couple weeks, they're going to go through and disbud all the buds on the chrysanthemum so it doesn't flower. You know, when you think about that, it's like, wow, that's crazy, right? That's just insane amount of work. And it makes the people that do that work, when someone from the industry comes here and is like, wow, you know, like I know what went into that. That connection is even deeper, you know, it's that gratitude. Not that you don't get that from the public, but you do get that from the industry as well, from people that are in the know, you know, what it takes to do that.
Well, it's not even just the initial design and install of it, like irrigation after, fertilizer after, fungicides, insecticides, like it's a constant checking on everything. And it's just crazy seeing it, like being someone in the industry, I'm like, I don't know if I would ever be able to do that. Like I've planted like thousands of flats of flowers, but that's all just going, like it's just flat in the ground. And so just seeing pictures of these things and like friends talk about them. I have a friend whose parents live in Villanova and they go out all the time and they'll send me pictures every time they go because they're like, oh, Macy loves this. I'm just like, oh my gosh, the amount of work that just went into that display.
It's a lot of work, but there's also translatable skills there too. So like you mentioned, like I do it, you know, I normally plant flat. We've had classes even for, you know, horticulture enthusiasts where they learn how to make the orbs that we have. and, you know, taking those ideas and playing with it. You know, luckily if you're working in a greenhouse, they might let you play around a little bit. If you show that, you know, I really want to try to make a begonia ball with a cascading sweet potato off the back end of it. And I want to make it big. And, you know, you might get that opportunity. It's interesting because it sparks that curiosity in all of us, but I'd encourage you and I'd challenge you, Macy, to be like, hey, instead of just doing the plantings on the ground, I'm going to add a structure in next year and give it a shot.
I need to do it. I have a site here that would actually be perfect for that. They would be like so amazing. The only one here in Dallas that would have something like that. So I might be calling or emailing you later for some tips.
Sounds good.
We'll have an accountability session podcast. Macy, how did that go? That'd be perfect.
Matthew, I know you can't see it right now, but she's sweating a little bit.
I got to come up with a structure. I'm over here trying, just like correlating. I'm trying to think of how to do like a centerpiece for my wedding. And now I've got to build some type of 10-foot structure on a corporate headquarters. So we'll figure it out.
Well, that's also where connecting with the floral industry works, right? So the floral industry does all that. They're like, structure is not a problem. Like, we make armatures all the time. And if you connect with somebody that's in the floral industry, they're like, we got it. Not a problem.
It's incredible. And I'm just looking at the picture of the thousand bloom mum, by the way. I'm just like, it gives me anxiety because I think about all the mums that I've installed. I'm just like, and knowing how the crew is like, you break off a stem. I'm just like, it makes me cringe a little bit, like how sensitive that thing is. But that's awesome. That's so cool. Oh my gosh. I feel like we could talk about this forever. But we're going to roll into a rose and thorn section. So Matthew, we have a little section here, like what's going well, maybe what's not going so well, in our personal or professional lives. It doesn't really matter, but, yeah, we kind of do a round robin and share with the crowd. So, I can kick us off. So I start off my thorn, covered in the beginning, got recovering from surgery. It's also a rose because the pain is kind of going away. So I'll be able to move it hopefully by next week. So, I'm actually really happy that I can get out outside and walk. Just like seasonal depression is like going away, and like we actually have sun and springtime, so it's good. But that's it for me.
Well, I got an email this morning that I was selected out of thousands and thousands of applicants to run the Chicago Marathon. So that is a huge rose and an even more massive thorn for my summer. But I'm excited for the challenge. So if you're wondering what I'm doing, it's not growing fancy structures. It will be running a lot.
That's exciting, Neil. Congrats.
Yeah, man, that's cool.
That's awesome.
Very much so. So for me, roses, let's see, we start of our season here, like officially kicks off on Monday, I guess. And we've all talked about it, and it's kind of known nation or industry wide that, you know, there's labor shortages and everything. I'm very happy that out of the 25 people who directly report to me, that every one of them came back this year. So that's awesome. That good weight off of my shoulders as far as getting work done this year. And then thorn, I got a flat tire a couple weeks ago coming home one night, and it has been nothing but problems because I had to get new tires on my car, and the place I took it messed up the alignment. And so we'll be going in for the third realignment of my car in a week later this afternoon. So that's been a real thorn for me right now.
Yeah, that's a pain in the butt.
Man. My thorn is this rain that we keep getting on and off. It's like raining overnight a couple inches, and it's really thrown a niche in my scheduling for the week. And so I was pushing everything. And as season starts up, it gets harder. You want to finish your spring operations before you start mowing full time. But my rose, and the reason I wasn't on the podcast last week, is that I've been working on a really big contract for the last 5 months, and I officially got the contract this week. And so the team is super excited. Boss is really proud. So that's good. And then also our H2B workers got in Tuesday. And so we're really excited to have them back. They have the biggest smiles. They're like family. And so it's nice to finally have them back on the ground here. And we're really excited.
I've got a thorn from earlier today in our conversation when we talked about Tower Hill Botanic, and I failed to remember that it was started by the Worcester or Worcester. I'm not going there with my.
We say Worcester up here. Worcester. Yeah. There's a lot of letters you just skip right over.
Yeah, after being in Ohio and it's Worcester there, and I'm like, I don't even want to touch it. But if you want to know more about the gardens, it was started by the County Horticultural Society in the 1840s. So it wasn't a single individual, it was a group. And my apologies to Grace, who's their executive director. I should have known that. She's my baseball partner. So I think I might owe her a drink at the next MLB game we go to. And my rose was getting a chance to meet with you guys today and seeing that the industry is alive and well, and that, you know, there's a lot of engaged, passionate, you know, young professionals in the industry. Encourage you to reach out to your colleagues and bridge some of that gap that we mentioned between the industry and public horticulture, you know, private industry and public horticulture. And, you know, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure. We always love having passionate people on the podcast, and it's really infectious. It makes me excited. I don't know. It makes me feel nice inside. So, anyways, so thanks again for joining the podcast. Also, big thank you to our listeners. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, share with your coworkers, friends, and so you can hear really great discussions like we just had with Matthew. Matthew, can you just again give us your handle where people can follow your photography or catch up with you?
Yeah, definitely. I can do that. And I can also let you know where they can look for upcoming classes too.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you want to engage with us, if you go to longwoodgardens.org, that's our main website, and you click on the education tab, you'll learn all about the upcoming classes that we have, from floral design to house plants to landscape design, sustainable design. We have a weekend designer class for people that are just getting started on their own as well. So if you know, you have one plot you want to do, that class should be fun as well. And then my personal Instagram is MSU Matador. And yeah, I'm also, you know, involved in Emergent and a lot of the other chat groups as well through Facebook.
Awesome. Great. Well, everybody, it's great talking to you. Matthew, thanks again. And hope you have a good rest of your day.
You guys too.
All right, later.
See you, everybody.